All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/scotthortonshow. All right, you guys, introducing Ron Enzweiler. He was in the State Department in Iraq and Afghanistan and also worked with USAID, but now he's a good guy and writes for us at antiwar.com from time to time. And this one is really important. Gaslighting of the American public on Pensacola terrorist attack continues. Welcome back to the show, Ron. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Great to be on your program again and supporting your journalism and the anti-war.com people. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you around. You do good stuff. And this is, it's a crazy time all the way around. And our news cycle is dominated, of course, by the big germ. So it's important that we keep a spotlight on all this other stuff that is still also important, such as this terrorist attack at Pensacola Naval Air Station back on December the 6th of 2019 by a Saudi national who was in the U.S. for pilot training at the Naval Air Station there. And as you remind us here, three Americans were killed and eight were injured. And then just last week, there was one right along these lines. I hope you know the details better than me because I don't know them very well. About what happened in Corpus Christi, was where there was something like an attempted attack along these lines, although apparently a guard grabbed his rifle and put an end to it real quick. And I think that was the end of it there. But maybe you can fill us in on that too. But this was, again, I believe, another Saudi student in the country.
Well,
go ahead.
In that case, Scott, well, first of all, I almost put in my article that was published on your website a couple of days earlier. I was going to ask, what is the Arabic word for a copycat? Because I was almost sure there would be other people trying to, now that this is back in the news, that some in the FBI, kind of glossed over all the background on the terrorist motivation, anti-Americanism and doesn't like what we're doing in the Middle East, that sort of thing. In that case, Scott, actually, I think it wasn't so much a pilot, a Saudi national in the country for pilot training. It was a local Arab citizen of the United States who just got flamed up and just tried to go through the front gate of the base.
Oh, okay.
And he did shoot. I think it was even a security contractor. I wasn't even sure it was a U.S. soldier. But
he was a naturalized citizen that did it, huh? That attacked a military base? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, trying to crash the front gate. There might have been a second accomplice. I never heard more about that, but they thought it might have been another guy who was part with him who got away. The number one attacker got shot down, shot killed, so that kind of ended that episode. But back on the information that came out, I guess it's been about, it came out on May 18th. I guess that's like, 10 days ago or so. Scott, they actually did say in that police report or the FBI report that there are 850 Saudi nationals training at U.S. air bases throughout the country. And after the guy in December sort of slipped through security and background checks and was obviously the detailed report on that did come out from the Justice Department and the FBI was that this particular Saudi national had joined the Saudi military on purpose to go into the pilot training program, get sent to the U.S., then use his presence here to carry out a jihadi attack. And he was actually in contact with al-Qaeda the night before al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. He was actually in contact with them the night before. They finally got that off his cell phones. But, this is one person who... there's 850. They actually sent home 21 more people in the last 6 months based on the fact that they thought they might be suspected radicalized Saudis in our country. And you think about it, Scott, this makes 9/11 Look simple. We're giving them the airplane. We're teaching them to fly. We're giving them the airplane, and we're letting them, you know, fly around the country, at least within restricted areas, you know, for their pilot training. And it doesn't take much imagination to find some guy decides he wants to, you know, plow that plane into a city or something like that and not land it back at the base. And
thank even God if you said, this okay, guy's imagination doesn't seem to extend further than grabbing a gun, huh?
You know, and that's, you know, if I was planning this, I mean, hey, I'm not trying to, you know what I mean? It just does seem, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if I was planning this thing out, I don't think I would have just, you know, got a gun, run outside my base and shoot a couple of soldiers that had me walking by, you know, as you got out there. But let's not try to condone any of this stuff. It's obviously horrible.
No, certainly it not. It creates a risk factor. Of course not. It could be worse, is all, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, and, you know, it doesn't take much imagination to find it out. And
well, and you look at what happened at Fort Hood, where he knew he had a whole room full of guys and killed 13, you know. Yeah. So, and that was with just a handgun, I believe, maybe two.
And this was definite, you know, motivated by U.S. Involvement in the Middle East, you know, pro-Israel stuff, you know, soldiers in occupying Arab countries and, you know, killing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Muslims for U.S. geopolitical interest. I mean, it's clear that this was what motivated, same as Osama bin Laden, of course, going back to 9/11, if you read his manifesto. But so it's kind of, you know, it's getting, I think the relation, I think the facts are getting pointed out here. I admit, Scott, I just happened to catch a blurb last night. I don't normally watch much cable, but I did catch a little bit of Laura Ingraham, where she had Pompeo on. They were mostly talking about China and, you know, softball questions about China and Hong Kong. But at the end, she kind of threw him a zinger and said, what about this Saudi Arab guy in here for pilot training getting, you know, attacking and killing soldiers at our bases? And how do we justify having these guys here to get this training when it's obviously a security risk? And you love this answer, Scott. So Pompeo says, well, you know, we have to train the Saudi pilots over here so we don't have to send more American pilots to the Middle East so they can fly all the missions over there to try to keep Americans safe. So I said, you got to be kidding me. You know, talk about gaslighting the American public. I mean, that's as if we're going to go over there and, you know, of course we train these guys, Scott, to fly F-15.
We have to train them here so that we don't have to train them over there. Like, what? These guys and their silly flip-floppy slogans, you know?
Yep.
And we're meanwhile, gonna go bomb Yemen. They're keeping us safe from who? The Houthis? Is that it? Don't make him finish that sentence about who the Saudis are helping keep us safe from.
That's why. And of course, unfortunately, this kind of gets one of my questions I had about the article is that the American public gets so just, you know, deceived. Let's use a nice word, deceived by the press releases from the Saudi embassy, what these public officials, what Trump says. You know, Trump reads out this statement from King Salman back in December. This was the article of one of my, or my first article that I, you know, wrote for antiwar.com back in December, where he actually, the King, oh, Saudi Arabs love Americans. I said, gee, I live there. My family's lived there for a long time, my wife's family. And I go, wow, that's news to me. I mean, it's the most anti-Western, you know, the Wahhabi establishment is practicing a very fundamentalist form of Islam. They still have, you know, Sharia law where you get your hand cut off if you caught stealing, and women who commit adultery are scorned, and there's even beheadings and stonings. I mean, you know, any idea that there's any sort of common values between our countries is just ridiculous, you know, and that yet that type of information doesn't get out to the American public, and people in Washington, the mainstream media mainly tries to just downplay all that stuff. Doesn't mention all the blowback and the fact that our presence there, particularly in Saudi Arabia, is causing a lot of angst in the Islamic world. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it must have been Daniel Davis who recently was talking about that on the show, about being in Saudi Arabia and how they told him during Iraq War One, I think, about how, yeah, you're just the hired help. You know, they look at us like we're Filipino maids, basically here to fight their war for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and of course, we sell them, you know, tens of billions of dollars of military hardware every year that, you know, fuels the military industrial complex. And
isn't that funny that like whites are so in the West, in the world, just generally speaking, they're kind of so racist against Arabs that they couldn't imagine that the Saudis would be racist against us. and think that, right, that they're the Uber mentioned and that we're just their servants. So here we are acting as their servants, but acting, you know, completely oblivious to who's zooming who, because how could those, you know, sand N-words or whatever be, you know, really taking advantage of us, not us.
Well, you know, the other factor that doesn't come out too much, I might mention, I did listen in on a Quincy Institute webinar on Wednesday that was the future of U.S.-Saudi relations. And besides Aaron David Miller, who's a fairly knowledgeable person about the Middle East, as most of your listeners will probably know, you know, in terms of being involved in U.S. Israel-Palestinian peace process, as well as a scholar from London School of Economics, Madawi al-Rashidi, who is a Saudi and lives in London, very, very astute woman from what I could hear. But she even tells me, she brought out the fact, Scott, that the pro-West orientation of particularly Mohammed bin Salman, you know, the current priest in I guess he's the king in waiting, whatever you want to exactly call him,
crown prince.
Yeah, he's basically, he's going so far pro-Western that he, that the Wahhabi religious establishment is, she basically said right out in the interview that they have no legitimacy now anymore for a large part of the Wahhabi religious establishment, which is the dominant force in the country in terms of how stability is maintained in Saudi Arabia. And that's been a very tenuous relationship ever since Aramco, which was the Arabian American oil company, was formed in 1930. They didn't want any Westerners in the country to even, you know, help with the oil production, that sort of thing. And they kind of had to make a deal where you kind of keep these guys low profile and, like you said, just use them as indentured servants to work on the oil fields and keep the oil flowing, and we keep all the money. So that was kind of, like you were saying a moment ago, kind of they looked down on us as inferior people because we didn't practice religion most, you know what I mean, and all the other things they think are important in life. And that relationship got really strained. We started putting U.S. soldiers in the country. Of course, there's been several attacks, the Khobar Towers attack and other ones, where they just write out, you know, they just don't like Westerners in the country. And, you know, it's just, I think there's a good chance, and this is kind of what she was alluding to, the Erebus lady on the podcast, was that she was alluding to the fact that there could be the royals under bin Salman has to be a little bit careful because he could really upset things here. And that got to be interesting part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. Is that how stable and how mutually beneficial is the Saudi-U.S. relationship at this point?
Well, especially right now when, you know, their economy has got to be – I haven't seen the charts. I should ask David Stockman to come on the show and tell us about what the Saudi charts say about their oil production and revenues. But it's got to look like the world's deepest black hole right now.
Yeah, and of course, they just went through that price war with Russia, you know, that was also discussed. That, you know,
right,
these
before,
guys,
the world's greatest drop in demand for fuel ever by a million times, they were already in a price war with the Russians.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's a geopolitical, I mean, you know, they're doing the U.S. no favors by stuff like that, you know, because, and they probably realizing we're getting more oil independence. So we're not, you know, the big reason I was there in the 80s, you know, and people before me, and even up through probably 2000 or so, we needed, you know, 4 or 5 million barrels of oil, of Saudi oil coming our way every day. And it made sense to have a military presence there to protect that. And just no longer the real world anymore. Things have changed
then,
totally.
I mean, David Stockman used to always say that, no, I mean, as we've seen since then, that the solution to high oil prices, in this case, not because Saudi cut us off, but just because of the disruption from Iraq War II over there, that the solution to high oil prices is high oil prices. And all that does is the obvious, which is create new discovery and new development and new investment in bringing new resources to bear so that greedy capitalists can profit off of those high prices, and then that's what drives the prices right back down again and so forth. So with or without the Saudis, the world will find a fuel supply. There's enough oil to last forever, and a lot of people think that's unfortunate or whatever, but never mind environmentalism for the sake of the argument, just in terms of our dependence on Saudi oil. There's always been enough oil in Texas. The only question is at what price and are you willing to develop it?
They have to go to more expensive recovery techniques. And let's face it, we're with our massive military industrial complex, Scott, we're subsidizing the carbon fuel industry, which most people that are environmentally concerned, you know, climate change, we're the ones who are. It's kind of funny because I think in that call I was on with the Quincy Institute, Dr. Miller talked about the fact that we've spent $60 billion fighting terrorism. I'm not sure where we got that number. As far as I'm concerned,
it's true.
All of the Afghanistan war, that even would be low, you know, would be closer to the truth. I think 6.4 trillion is the number in terms of, let's face it. We got the quote fighting terrorism started after 9/11, and that was the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war.
Yeah.
And that's all about,
and the Pentagon has probably consumed as much oil in that time as Germany, you know.
And that's our quote evil foreign policy in the Middle East has sort of caused us to spend all that money and get all the, have all the other plus the millions of local nationals we killed. I mean, it's just incredible having been over there and seen all that. I never could understand why we were fighting that. What was this whole thing about? But it really caused a lot of problems. And
so
I think there's a
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I think there's a consensus from some of those people that I on that call, and I know Martin Indyk, who was a very prominent member of the blob in Washington and Middle East stuff. He wrote a nice editorial in the Wall Street Journal after the Soleimani assassination in January about, hey man, we got to start rethinking why we're even over there,
because
it's
amazing?
Definitely
this is the primary author of the dual containment policy, finally.
Well, he's finally saying, I think he saw Trump going into the, starting the war with Iran, which he, of course, I would said would be about the stupidest thing you could possibly do. But I'm not sure that is a constraint on what foreign policy, what foreign policy comes out of Washington these days. But I think that I'm a little bit optimistic, Scott, that there's a growing consensus. You know, I give the Washington Post some credit, maybe because of their relationship with, the Khashoggi guy that got murdered viciously by the Saudis. Give him a little bit of credit for pointing out that some of this Saudi-U.S. relationship is starting not to make as much sense and should be reassessed. So most of the other people are just, sweeping us all under the carpet, making these terrorist attacks sound like they're no big deal, in terms of the pilots we talked about being flying our airplanes around our country and getting all this training. And, I think clearly Trump sees the whole thing as just a big business deal. Hey, they're going to buy tens of billions of dollars of aircraft and other military hardware from us every year, and that's just good business. But he doesn't think through the implications of that, and I think that's very unfortunate, because I see it as a lose-lose relationship at this point. It might have started out as a win-win, back in the we needed the oil, they needed some economic development, we had to help them produce the oil, that's why they had a lot of Americans and Westerners over there. But I don't see that anymore. That's just, you got to deal with the reality of the situation. And we're making the U.S. presence there, the Western presence, your flaming terrorism. I mean, I love it in this one article I quoted in my article, I quoted the press release the Saudis put out after the press report last Monday. This is where they claim that this is
and
the Saudi embassy
the,
put
the
this out.
The report that came out was about that this guy really had been working with Al-Qaeda long term.
Al-Qaeda.
Something like that.
Totally. Yep. And the quote says, the Saudi people are greatly angered by this barbaric act of the shooter. This person, the perpetrator, in no way, shape, or form represents the feelings of the Saudi people who love the American people. And then there was one about how they, later on in the article, they talk about how they, this one I liked, they said, as this attack tragically reminds us, the extremists and terrorists that threaten both our nations will not stop in their efforts to target innocent people. But we, and of course he's talking about the Saudis, will never let the terrorists win or allow their other acts of hatred to divide us. Saudi Arabia claiming the high ground on fighting terrorism is about as ridiculous as, it just, that's just completely the opposite of the reality. That, and this came out in that call on Wednesday as well, that, you know, they are the greatest sponsor of other jihadi ideology comes out of the Wahhabism that they fund all around the world. I mean, I saw all the mosques and buildings they think they built in Afghanistan. I mean, they flew all the pilgrims back over to Mecca and stuff like this. They are really the greatest source of terrorist ideology and financial support in the Islamic world. And yet to the American public, they claim they're out there fighting terrorism and trying to work with the United States on making everybody safer. I mean, I just, those are statements that just have no basis in reality. And I think the fact that they're starting to lose their legitimacy with their own people, the Saudi royal family, that's going to be a factor that comes up here fairly soon, I think.
Hold on just one second. Be right back. So you're constantly buying things from Amazon.com. Well, that makes sense. They bring it right to your house. So what you do, though, is click through from the link in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org, and I'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. Won't cost you a thing. Nice little way to help support the show. Again, that's right there in the margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, the Scott Horton Show interviews 2004 through 2019, interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. You need stickers for your band or your business? Well, Rick and the guys over at thebumpersticker.com have got you covered. Great work, great prices, sticky things with things printed on them. Whatever you need, thebumpersticker.com will get it done right for you. Thebumpersticker.com. Well, now, so there's this report in the Weekly Standard, but it confirms my bias, so I believe it. It's from back in 2001, and it says that in the 1990s, the source is an unnamed special operations commander, a high-level one, says that the joint staff at the Pentagon used to always say that, well, terrorism is a small price to pay for being a superpower. And, you know, the thing about that is, not that this is justified or anything, I definitely don't mean that, but I'm saying it is understandable why they would think that. That, you know what, a couple of truck bombs go off in Africa, and mostly Africans are killed and a few dozen Americans.
Yeah.
Somebody tries to sink the coal. They don't even sink the coal. They kill 17 sailors. They bomb Khobar Towers. They kill 19 airmen. And how, from the point of view of those guys, they're like, hell, we had a storm on D-Day, the beaches of Omaha and whatever the thing. And so it is a small price to pay if you look at all the advantage that we're taking and that kind of thing. And then, of course, September 11th at least temporarily changed the calculation on that geez, you know, we really can do a lot of damage with a plane, huh?
Well,
I worry that, and of course we have all the FBI entrapments over the years, but now the FBI doesn't have to keep entrapping people because now they really are generating enough homegrown and pseudo copycat and Fort Hood style, San Bernardino style attacks like these, where I fear that because you have, I'm not saying it would be better if it was bigger, I don't mean that, but I'm just saying, because you have a small attack where a handful of people are killed, and it doesn't reverberate through the society and everything, it's just another news story, it goes away again, I think, you know, there's no reckoning, right? It doesn't matter that it happened. And so, where we're supposed to be saying, oh my God, you know what? Keeping our bases in Arabia and continuing to bomb Arabs from them continues to cause problems for us here. And so we don't even have that conversation at all. We just continue on like it's okay. And then you and I are having conversations like this where we're going, Jesus, kind of lucky he didn't suicide crash his plane into downtown somewhere, which he might have, considering he was a flight student. You know, this is the kind of thing where it's like, all other things being equal, if it was just a regular Tuesday or whatever, that the Needles should scratch off the record. Everyone should stop and go, look, we still got Bin Ladenite type attacks in our country. You know, 20 years after you guys promised you were going to end terrorism by fighting it over there. So what, in fact, is the damn deal? And instead, that conversation isn't even happening.
Clearly. And I'm you know, the sooner we withdraw troops out of Afghanistan, that place becomes a non-problem. And then same way in the Middle East, you know, get out of Iraq and Syria. These are places that we're creating more problems and issues than we can possibly do any good. But I was going to mention, Scott, the other shoe that's going to drop, and this came up in the Quincy seminar on Wednesday, is the fact that, you know, Trump and Kushner and Netanyahu are pushing this one-sided land grab deal by Israel. And there was a question that came up that I think was a good one, where, you know, if it's clear that Saudi Arabia is not going to, this was Aaron David Miller's opinion, not going to support that in any overt way, because it's just too much chance that, you know, that they don't want their fingerprints on it. But if the Trump administration pushes it through with the continuing Netanyahu Israeli government, I think the jihadist elements in Saudi and the other countries, I just don't see them abandoning Palestine as a core Islamic issue that has, you know, been around that region now for 50, 60, 70 years. I agree that the Saudi crown prince is probably, you know, not going to rally against it in any overt way, because he needs to, you know, he stays in power only because the U.S. supports him. So, but I just think there's enough, and I think Madawi, the lady from London, kind of thought the same thing, that there's enough probability that if that goes down, maybe it won't go down because it won't go anywhere and Trump may not get elected, who knows what, but if it does go down, then that's going to be a real, that could be a real game changer in terms of jihadi activity and Arab unrest and attacks on U.S. military installations over there with almost no consequence of what the secondary effects are. So I think that's still out there as a, you know, is a potential problem if, depending on how that situation goes.
Yeah.
So someone has to keep that in mind. And I kind of, you know, things with Iran have kind of been toned down a little bit, but I still think there's still underlying issues there, and the continuing strangulation of their economy is only going to, you know, make things worse if Trump gets reelected. But let's just, I mean, those are, so it's still a very dangerous place. And I'm just interested to see some of the big name Middle East experts, so-called, coming to the same conclusion that more or less, you know, I am, is that, you know, hey, it's just time to get out of there. Because you just, you know, I've heard Andrew Bacevich talk about this in some of his book seminars and things, that, you know, we got to just reassess this thing and realize there's no win out there. So we might as well just minimize the involvement and realize we're never going to change that part of the world. Yeah, Israel can take care of itself. It's got the strongest military in the region by far. And just, you know, just focus, deal with our own problems here at this country. But that's kind of the philosophy I've developed, just having been around the world and been in some of these places and seeing things a little bit closer up, and, you know, and realizing that whatever good USAID did, we probably did more harm in all sorts of other ways. Believe me, State Department, same way, military, clearly, you know, so we just don't have the, our institutions are not the, you know, the empire just is not well received any place in the world that I've ever lived. I can almost say that is a fact.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, one real danger here, is that it's so easy for Al-Qaeda to jerk America's chain. And, you know, by that, I mean, take one example where there's at least, I don't know, I think a 50-50 chance that the attack on December 27th on the American base in Iraq wasn't even Khatib al-Hezbollah, the Shiite militia at all, Iran-backed or otherwise, but was actually an ISIS attack. Makes perfect sense to think that it was.
Yeah.
America's there embedded with the Shia fighting against ISIS. Why wouldn't the presumption be that it was ISIS that attacked the damn base? But then, so it goes to show, though, that when you have Americans in the foreign policy establishment, and particularly in the form of our current Secretary of State and his cabal inside the administration, that they are so primed to blame Iran for anything that, you know, think about if that same principle took place inside this country. And so instead of a local rocket Katusha attack instead of a local Katyusha rocket attack in Iraq, you had a major terrorist attack inside the United States. And wouldn't we expect that Pompeo and the people with him would be saying to Trump that this must have been Iran and now's our chance to hit Iran, and relying on the fact that Donald Trump actually does not know shit from apple butter and would say, okay, if you guys say it was the Shia who did this, let's hit them and go along with something like that. I think that is the real danger. And by the way, other than the overthrow of bin Salman, or, you know, the installation of Zawahiri as Pharaoh in Egypt or something like that, can you think of anything that Al-Qaeda would like to see better than the Ayatollah beheaded and the current regime in Iran overthrown?
Matter of fact, at this webinar I listened to, the Arabist lady, Mawawi, she said that they actually called their attack on the Houthis down in Yemen jihad. They consider that to be jihad against, you know, infidels and Islam or whatever you want to, you know, the Shia Sunni issue, of course, coming back.
You mean Obama Trump Al Qaeda war against the Houthis in Yemen? Uh huh. Go ahead.
That's why she said we're supporting what the Saudi fundamentalists believe is jihad. You know, so we are actually talking about spreading terrorism. I mean, we are reinforcing the notion that they are saving their form of Islam or whatever they think they're saving, but you know what I mean, and territorial integrity. But you know, so that gets so muddled and mixed up. You're right. There's no idea that there'll always be the tension between the Iran is the Shia power and Saudi is the Sunni power, you know, that's been going on for centuries. So, I mean, to think we're going to get involved in that and resolve it, but we just got to get out of the middle of it. And you know, by the way, going back to your rocket attack story episode there, Scott, I lived on all those bases in Iraq and in Afghanistan. We had rocket attacks every week. I mean, it was just standard procedure. The siren would go off, you'd jump in the bunker, you know, sometimes they would hit, sometimes they would miss. But I mean, that is like anybody that served over there or lived over there, that's just like not even news. I mean, that's just, they don't want us here. They want us out. And every day they're going to remind us of that fact. And that's about what those things are all about. They're not really intended to decapacitate the military or have any big strategic value. It's just reminding you that we don't want you over here. And the sooner you get out, the better. And, you know, they might every now and then kill somebody by luck. You know what I mean? And, but that's, I mean, to make a major issue out of that and to go launch this war against, assassinate a government official of another country, set that precedent. Think about that for a minute. You know, that, you know, now if someone comes to Washington and assassinates some government official, it's just payback for the Soleimani execution. You know, I mean, you got to recognize that there's some decorum or some rules of war here that we're violating. But so that's kind of what, I mean, I never always thought that. I think you're right about the intelligence masses, whatever assessment the powers to be wanted to say. I mean, I've been through that. I've seen how they would come out with all these assessments how we're winning the war in Afghanistan every year, you know, and we always did. The one commander would come in and claim he did better than the guy before him, and then the next guy would, you know, do better. Well, if we've had five or six successive commanders, they're all doing better. Why are we winning the war? I mean, no one ever asked that question. So I totally agree that the intelligence community's assessments of who did what for what reasons is designed to fit a narrative that somebody wants to achieve based on some other objective or interest they have. It's not based on hard reality. So that's kind of my ground level observation of that. But as I said, the rocket attacks are that's just not even a significant event.
Yeah. Now, so back to the Pensacola thing in specific here, a fun kind of sort of side note about this, I guess it's not that fun, is that there was a Republican congressman who tweeted out some of the statement that was made on Twitter by the attacker at the time last December. And Twitter took down his page for the day or 2 days or whatever it was, a Republican congressman. And the congressman said that this is terrible censorship, which I totally agree. Obviously, it's not official government censorship, but it's totally against the spirit of free speech. It was totally uncalled for. And the fact is that if they had let his post stand, his post actually refuted itself, because what he claimed the statement said was that Islamic extremism will not sleep until all Americans are dead or something like that, when that, in fact, is not at all what the statement says. In fact, it begins, "I'm not against you for just being American. I don't hate you because of your freedoms. I hate you because every day you supporting, funding, and committing crimes, not only against Muslims, but also humanity. I am against evil, and you are evil," etc., 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 etc. Has nothing whatsoever to do with, "I've signed on to this extreme form of Islam that says that I must travel to North America and kill innocent people for believing in Jesus, peace be upon him, but not Muhammad, peace be upon him too." Yeah, right. And instead, and it goes on, by the way, and by the way,
yeah,
and I think you know this. My article, as far as I know, my article at antiwar.com from last December, which is called "Pensacola Blowback Terrorism," is the only place in the world where you can find this guy's entire statement. Except if you follow my link, there it is on the web archive. They saved his tweet at the Wayback Machine, is where I linked to and got it from. Which I'll give credit to the New York Post, because they actually were the first to link to the Wayback Machine there. But they didn't quote the whole thing, and I quote the whole thing. And it in no way justifies this guy killing anyone. It's just a matter of shedding light on the reality. It's not an excuse. It's his reasons. And we need to know, what are the motives for doing this kind of thing? And what he's talking about, of course, is violence committed by the American government against the people of the Middle East at large, and he ain't wrong about that. And as Ron Paul said, you know, if we ignore that people are upset about what we do to them, then we ignore that at our own peril, and we put ourselves in danger if we think we can just go around bombing people and not end up getting shot in return. This is the way it works. And so here we still are having this conversation in 2020.
Yep, but that was Matt Gaetz, or Gaetz, I guess. Oh, he's a congressman from Pensacola. Okay. So it's his district. So you're right, Scott, because I was working on my article, you know, and I tried to link back to one of his tweets or one of his statements, and it was gone, you know, because I knew this guy said this. I just read it 5 hours ago. What happened to it? And, you know, I had to wait till your article came out, where you actually could link back, as you mentioned, to the original tweet on Twitter. But, you know, Twitter and the MSM, Wall Street Journal had an article. They just completely whitewashed it with any of this manifesto, you know, anti-Israel, anti-American military interventionism. They whitewashed it all out of the news stories. As I mentioned in the article we just talked about, the one I wrote last week, I give the Washington Post credit. They do make a few words in that regard, but no one talks about the manifesto, about why was he radicalized? What was the real issue that was, you know, perpetuating this attack, and what are the implications for our foreign policy? That was my whole point. What's the implication on our military and foreign policy? We're going to sell all these jets to Saudi Arabia, these war-fighting machines, and have to bring their pilots over here to train them. Some of us to question the wisdom of doing that, given the large potential for a major attack and problem. And of course, secondly, if it's all driven by blowback from our policy in the Middle East, isn't it time to reassess our policy and realize, like you just said, that the fundamental problem, we're creating the problem we think we're trying to solve by just the way our actions are over there and how we support, you know, despotic regimes and, don't care about the Palestinians and do all sorts of things that are just anathema to most of the people in the Islamic world. And these are, you know, I worked a lot of well-educated, you know, people, in the jobs I had, you know, doing training government officials and doing business stuff and things like that, Scott, and I'd have very intelligent conversations with them where they'd ask these very simple questions, and I had a hard time. You know, you're right. I got to agree. We're just doing this for some geopolitical reason that has no real interest in your society or your culture or your people. We're just, you know, have our own reasons to be spending all this money and doing all this, and I really can't answer those questions about why this it makes sense from your viewpoint, because I kind of agree with you. It doesn't, you know, that's just the reality of how that plays out. I mean, we always try to oversell, I think, our how the rest of the world loves America and our way of life and things we do and stuff like that. I just don't come away with that.
It's funny. I always think of that stuff as mostly just for American consumption. that, don't worry, everybody, we're going to help the people over there. They know that the people over there know better, but they know that we don't. So
that you're definitely right about that one. And maybe they have to sell it to the American public, who doesn't have, most of them are not world knowledgeable people, just because they lived, you know, the very life, you know, without traveling a whole lot over abroad. But anyhow, you're right. And it, you know, they, you want to trust your government, you want to believe what they're saying is true. But, you know, when you get out in the real world and experience some of the cause and effects of these things and negative consequences, civilian casualties and daily bombing runs and, you know, just disrupting people's lives, you realize, man, this isn't really helping advance any, you know, any legitimate humanitarian interest. I mean, that was kind of always my final judgment on the whole thing. But And then, like article said, the U.S. public gets gaslighted by the politicians who are taking money from the arms industry and other, you know, people that are influential in Washington. So it's just a perpetual machine trying to maintain the status quo. I mean, That's, you know, it's going to be hard to see that breaking, but that's hopefully there may be some some crack in the blob there, and some of the thinkers there are starting to realize that this is perpetuating, this makes no sense. And let's hope it winds up, as I say in the end of my article, you really gotta, this is the only way this ever, we just gotta retrench from the Middle East if you want to really get rid of, make Americans safe here in this country, because it's, you're not going to make them safe by going over there and interfering in all these other civilizations and destroying countries and creating refugees and bombing people. You're not going to win any hearts and minds by, you know, running massive bombing campaigns. And, you know, the people you support, one day they support you, the next day they're against you. I mean, there's no loyalty to any cause that would be sympathetic with what the American military is trying to do.
Yep. All right, you guys. That is Ron Ensweiler, again, writing for antiwar.com. Gaslighting of the American public on Pensacola terrorist attack continues. And check out his book, When Will We Ever Learn? Good question. Thanks again, bud.
Okay, Scott, thank you.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.